In this episode of Movie Roars, we're going to review the movies Inside Llewyn Davis and Her. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And here's D as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane if you love the movies, the show's for you. How come Rashmi's the one taking pain meds today and I'm the one that's loopy?
Ah, transitioned my...
It's empathy.
Empathy pains.
Yes.
Because both movies we're talking about today are about how we live.
Ah, yes, he's all Yoda today.
In the past and in the future.
I sent multi-page notes here from Yasti.
No, just a page and a half each. Uh-oh, be warned.
All right.
I'm excited to talk about these.
I am too. Coen Brothers is always exciting, as is Spike Jones.
Yeah.
So where would you like to go first?
Inside Llewyn
Davis. Let's get Inside Llewyn. So Inside Llewyn Davis is the latest movie from the Coen brothers, who seem to now have it down pat in terms of, you know, having a new movie come out right in time for Oscars every year.
Yeah.
And Llewyn Davis is, I would say, a departure from their previous movies. And it is set in the early 1960s in New York, in the life of a musician who is trying to make it in the folk music scene. And the movie with a very detailed eye follows this character for a week in his life. And that's pretty much Inside Llewyn Davis. It stars Oscar Isaac in a lead role, an actor we haven't heard of before. And the movie also co-stars Carey Mulligan, Justin Timberlake, John Goodman, and many other regulars from the Coen Brothers movies. It's written and directed by them. And as I mentioned, it's set primarily in New York from about 50 years ago. Having said that, again, the movie is getting exceptional press since it's been playing the festival circuit. And it's a movie I really can talk a lot about. So I'll have to restrain myself. But I can't wait to jump into the discussion.
Okay. So is it possible for the Coen brothers to make a bad movie? No, this is yet another great to add to the list. This has all the quirk, character, and crazy that I have come to expect and love from a Coen extravaganza. And I had really, really high hopes for this one going in, and I wasn't disappointed. I really enjoyed this movie, and this was made even more excellent by the wonderful Ginger Tabby.
That's what I was going to say. You just liked it because of the cats.
Yes.
And I only liked it because of the cat. This is really a disappointment for me. It started so well, and it's darkly funny in the way that only the Coens can do it. They always have these wonderful characters. I've said this before, I think when we reviewed True Grit, that they have these characters with such bizarre quirks and behaviors that just seem so normal in their world. But the big failing for me in this movie was this tiresome, loathsome lead character. I didn't care, and in fact... Towards the end of the movie, I really had a hard time staying awake, just kind of dealing with... I didn't care for him or what happened to him, and I don't even remember what happened to him ultimately. I mean, that's how little impact. So I was really disappointed by this. You know, it had lots of funny Coen hallmarks, brilliant little ode to folk music, but other than that, not much for me here at all. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, I'll respond to what you just said, but... this was a movie which, in the immediate, I was really struggling with because I didn't know what the movie was about. And, you know, I tried not to read anything about it. All I knew was it was about a musician in the early 60s. And so in the moment, I was really struggling with it. But, you know, as I've thought about it and pondered about it, it's just grown exponentially. I've really grown to admire it. And my reaction to this movie is very similar to what it was after seeing A Simple Man. And remember, that was one where we were like, what the hell is this movie about?
Yeah, we need Sandy's explanation.
Yeah, why is it so dark? And why
serious
is it
man.
A serious man. Did I say A Simple Man? Yeah, A Serious Man. Why is it so dark? And why does it have this, you know, life sucks and we're all going to die kind of sensibility? And that movie, you know, the more you consider it, it's kind of grown on me. So, you know, I think it's a considerable piece of work now. I do.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what about this one?
No, this is what I'm talking about. Oh, this one,
yeah.
Inside Llewyn Davis.
I mean, for me, Joe, and I think in Coen Brothers, in this Coen Brothers movie, for me, this felt very much more like a Woody Allen movie than a Coen Brothers, I think, and that's, you know, never a bad thing in my book. Nothing quite happens, but a lot goes on. And I think you come out the other end thoughtful and changed in some way by what you've seen. And even if that's that this character is such an idiot and so stupid and deserves such a slap on the head, then that kind of changes you in some way.
See, this kind of stuff does work, you know, but oftentimes the character has some kind of redeeming feature. Like, I mean, A Serious Man's a great example because this is the movie that's most like this in the Coens back catalogue, right? Mm-hmm. But for me, with A Serious Man, yes, I had a hard time watching it in the moment, but what resonated with me after the movie was just how helpless this guy was with all of these things that were going around. He had this bewilderment and confusion, and I connected and related with that and found that ultimately hilarious. Here, I just... This fella's a dick. I mean, he just is. Look at the way he treats the people around him. Look at the situation he gets himself into, he gets them into, and ultimately, everyone's kind of loathsome. I just didn't like this world. It wasn't a fun time to spend time. And so I checked out. And unlike you, SD, it hasn't grown on me afterwards. I've gotten more and more annoyed about it, saying...
your face is so screwed up.
I feel like a character in a Coen Brothers movie, because now I'm just bitching about the world. But it was just dark and weird.
It's interesting, you know, from the minute you started what you said at the beginning, you know, I was smiling because I've been reading a lot about this movie and almost, you know, there's a very good article where they talked about why does this movie have such a polarized reaction? The ones who love it really love it. Mm-hmm. And then there's a group of people who hate it. And I think there's two reasons, but the one which is quoted very often is it depends on whether you can get past the main character. And the people who cannot get past the main character, you know, really have a hard time with this movie. And, you know... I mean, there's, like you said, there's no other way to say this. I mean, this lead character is not a good person.
No.
There's no other way. I mean, he's arrogant. He's cringingly irresponsible. He's inconsistent and sometimes just outright mean. But the movie also makes it clear that this is a person who has an abundance of talent. And, you know, so I think it makes this character real. And I think the movie's a commentary on failed art or a failed artist, that, you know, all genius is kind of effed up, that, you know, people who have talent are not always the good people, and they're irresponsible and they're stupid and they make the wrong decisions, but they have talent, and sometimes in spite of that you may or may not succeed. So maybe I'm reading too much into the movie, but I too had a problem with the lead character. There's nothing to hold on to him other mm-hmm. than his talent. I mean, he's you know, his singing, again, we can talk about, like, with Broken Circle Breakdown. I mean, the singing is amazing in this movie, the music, but I think that's a considerable obstacle. I did make it past that obstacle, but clearly you did not.
I think he's funny, and I think we're watching the film from his point of view, which is that, rather like A Serious Man, so it's good that you made that comparison, life just hasn't ended up how he expected.
Right.
And he doesn't realize that he's the reason why it hasn't ended up the way he wanted it to. So I think it's a really good narrative on... Some people are just clueless and they create their own havoc and chaos, but they don't know that. And so they almost blame the world for it. Mm. And I love that narrative. And I love Carey Mulligan is a great character in this movie as well.
Yeah, I love all the characters.
I love everyone in this movie. And then the great couple that he always goes and relies on, who are ever so nice, and then...
But look how he treats them.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. All of that, to me, is just an illustration of how clueless he is. And really, the message that came to me is that inside Llewyn Davis, there's nothing. He's just clueless, and he creates his own chaos. And that's the movie. But I loved how he kind of cared for the cat, and he didn't... Well, he wants to do the right thing, okay, because he chases the cat, and he carries the cat across New York. There's evidently something in there. He just can't...
But no.
It just doesn't flow for him.
I just worried he was worried that these people were never going to help him out again. I mean, that's the way I saw it. He was like, I lost their cat. They're never going to let me sleep on their couch. And I need to be able to sleep on their couch. I don't think he had any other motive for that. But and maybe that's just the way that you interpret his particular circumstances. But
I mean, I think every single, I mean, this is why the Coen brothers are so celebrated, I think, is because their vision is so unique. Every one of their movies has this coldness about them. There's some kind of, you know, heartlessness. Everyone, even the giddy ones, like, you know, the Big Lebowski, you know, there's a cold, there's some kind of a deliberate, you know,
unemotional,
like, life sucks kind of sensibility. And this movie,
so maybe True Grit.
No, True Grit, I think, had characters.
Maybe not to that extent, but
Fargo.
Yeah, and you know, so take that into account. The other piece to take into account is, God, they're just good craftsmen. I mean, you know, they are incapable of having a bad shot or a bad edit. I mean,
or a bad line of dialogue.
The dialogue is so witty.
I mean, I put them in this very high, lofty place where, you know, of master craftsmen. I mean, I put David Fincher in the same category and Christopher Nolan, God help me, in the same category as well. I mean, these are people who are technically so proficient that, you know, they can't do any wrong. And I think the one big departure for them with this movie is, for better or for worse, they've always had some semblance of a plot in most of their other movies. And this movie seems to completely abandon the traditional narrative. It's just, I mean, it's kind of clever in how it loops back over that period of 1 week, but there really isn't much story per se. I mean, it's just what happens to this character over a week.
I agree. And I would almost use that as a word of caution. If you're going in thinking you're going to get a heavy plotted movie with a, you know, linear story, you're not going to get that. This to me is literally a slow simmer about this crazy chaotic man called Lewin.
It's a character study.
It's completely
study,
a character. Yeah, I mean, this is just about that man, and I was completely delighted by it.
I mean, he's complex. I mean, and you know, you said, you know, is he clueless? So maybe he's immature and he's clueless, and maybe when he'll get older, he will get better at it. Or maybe this is his character. Maybe he's just an uncaring, unmeaning person. He's going to stay like that his whole life.
Well, I think he also lives from moment to moment. What we see is that this person never thinks about the future. He only thinks about what's right in front of him. And so there are a number of scenes where, you know, life is not going to be kind to him in the future because of a decision
he makes, right?
He's completely like, oh my God, I owe this money. I need this money right now. But he has a good heart because he wants to pay for what he needs to do.
I mean, there were so many times in the movie where if I were not actually in a theater, if I was watching this at home, I would have screamed like, what the hell is wrong with you? Don't do that. Stop it. I just laughed. You know, I mean, there are a couple of places where it gets very dark, you know, where he does some really unforgivable things, and it should have stopped me from enjoying the movie, but somehow it worked. It worked for me.
What did you think? Justin Timberlake was great in this movie.
Every ancillary character in this movie was so three-dimensional and hilarious. Their observational writing here is
brilliant.
Is terrific, because obviously everyone's kind of an exaggeration. Like, people like Carey Mulligan's character do not exist in the real world. People like the Justin Timberlake character.
I think people like Carey Mulligan do.
That's a characteristic made into a character.
Yeah.
Nobody walks around talking and walking the way that person does. They just take one specific aspect and they make a character out of it, and they do this better than anyone else.
Yeah.
They're almost like little caricatures, but they're done in a way that only the Coens can seem to do. And so she has this really odd behavior where she's more than brisk.
I mean, in her own words, I mean, you know, she breaks type, and, you know, she gets to play a character which, you know, in an interview she said she's an outright bitch, and she says nobody ever offers me a role where I get to play an outright bitch, because she always is the ingenue. She's like, you know, the object of affection of, you know, in every movie that she's in. And she just gets to be this really angry character. She was so angry all the time. I loved it.
Rather like Joe is through this review.
But so I loved all the ancillary characters, and Timberlake was great. I mean,
he was great.
Small role, but he was good.
He was
hilarious on cue, and he had this charm, but he also had this, you know, almost Christian rock feel about him. He was so good,
straight-laced.
I don't know.
And you know, I mean, God knows the Coen brothers and John Goodman have done each other right. But even by those standards, I mean, this might be my favorite John Goodman role in any of the Coen brothers movies. And that's saying a lot because he was in Barton Fink. He was in The Big Lebowski. He's so good here.
He's really good.
Everyone's good here. I mean, everyone is good here.
Yeah. Okay.
Everyone's good in the Coen brothers.
So now I'm dying to know Joe's score.
And the music. Yeah. Can you just talk about the music for a while? I mean, with the screener, we also got the soundtrack for the movie. And this is not the kind of movie not the kind of music I normally listen to. But I've played the soundtrack back to back now 10 times. And
really?
I can't get enough of it. And, you know, I think there's a song in the movie which plays so delightfully. You know, Please, Mr. Kennedy, that's the song.
Yes.
And that stuff, it's the stuff of instant legend, I think. I mean, it's so perfect. I mean, it's like lightning in a bottle. I mean, it's funny and it's...
Yeah.
Oh.
That whole scene is brilliant.
Right.
Right?
I mean...
No, and it has that guy from Girls.
Adam Driver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just great. Those three on screen singing that song, fantastic.
Every musical number here was well done. In fact, that's why I did end up really disappointed because the first... like 5-10 minutes of the movie is a
just
song
singing,
in, you know, this little bar kind of, you know, musical theater,
jazz,
and immediately I was drawn in by the cinematography, by the standard of the way that scene was constructed and composed was so artfully done, and the music itself suddenly it stirred something within me, and I was like, we are in for a real treat with this movie. And that's what I'm saying. It started so strong. Their vision is so clear, but this particular iteration didn't work. And it was all because of Lewin Bloody Davis.
Okay.
And maybe that was the point.
I honestly think the best marketing the movie can do is literally, I mean, there are full songs in this movie. Okay, mm-hmm. So to their great credit, you know, they, again, like Alexander Payne, Coen brothers feel no pressure from the marketing people at the studios. No marketing person would have allowed them to put entire songs in the movie, but they just do it. The movie starts with one, ends with one. And, you know, I think the best marketing they can do for the movie is just show a clip of, you know, Please, Mr. Kennedy, or the first song that he sings, you know, Hang Me, whatever it's called. I mean, because whoever watches this, if you're not, you know, turned on by that, then this movie is not for you. But anyway.
Okay. Wind up time. Joe.
Lewin Davis was mean, and I'm going to be mean too. This is going to get a 5 out of 10 from me. Again, with Coen brothers, their world and every, you know, this isn't a movie that I can recommend anyone go see that I think they'll enjoy. Some people may admire it, other people may like it more than I did, but I can't hand on heart recommend anyone see this because it's really annoying, and it starts well and goes downhill, peters out. 5 out of 10.
Yes, and Joe is wrong.
I mean, for me, this movie is really gaining in strength the more I think about it and the more I think about what it is about. And, you know, I would absolutely agree with you, Joe, that this movie is not for everyone. And I think it would do everybody a service if they knew up front that this is not a movie with, you know, a proper storyline, that all the movie is about is this character from one week in his life. And I think it's rich enough to be a rewarding experience if you watch it from that perspective. I fought with it, and once I stopped fighting, I started enjoying it a lot more. It has a lot of issues, including the lead character who is very hard to like. But be that as it may, I think it's a substantial piece of work. I give it somewhere between a 7 and an 8, 8 out of 10.
What would you have rated it coming out of the movie theater, right at that moment?
6.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I listened to the soundtrack, I've been reading up stuff. I mean, a lot of people say it's a portrait of a man who has the bad luck of having bad timing, you know, that he's probably the most gifted amongst a group of singers at that time. And it's about failure, you know, art which fails, you know, a person who is struggling, and they might be the most talented in the group, but they're not there at the right place at the right time, and opportunity passes them by. And that's, I think that's what the movie is also about. But
any film that has the line, "Where's its scrotum?" is one that must be watched, in my opinion. Go inside, outside, and on top of Lewin Davis. I love this movie. This is another 9 out of 10 for me.
Really?
Wow. Wow. I really liked it. I thought it was hilarious. I just thought, I really liked the character. For all the reasons you hated the character.
Yeah, I normally like this kind of quirky Coen Brothers world. It's just, I felt, you know, I couldn't stay awake for the last, like, 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And I was not the only one, by the way.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, normally I do the checking of who's got their eyes closed. Yes. I got a nudge saying, look, and yes, he had his eyes closed.
Did I?
Mm-hmm.
No. Just for a moment. Maybe you were enjoying the music, but
yes, maybe I had my eyes closed.
It was warm in there, and but I was looking around the theater too, and I think, you know,
well, that's why you didn't enjoy the movie.
I shouldn't have been bored enough to look around the theater, but I was. I was like, yeah, when's this going to end? You know, like, why doesn't he just get hit by a car or something? That would spice things, you know. And anyway, moving on. Our second movie of the week is Her. So Her is the latest movie by director Spike Jonze, known perhaps best for movies such as...
Adaptation.
Yeah, I was going to say, why can't I find that in his... Known for movies such as Being John Malkovich, Adaptation, Three Kings. Movie stars Joaquin Phoenix, Amy Adams, Scarlett Johansson, Rooney Mara, Chris Pratt, Olivia Wilde, amongst others. And the basic premise is it's about... A writer, a withdrawn writer, he almost writes, I think, like greeting card type things. It's set in some point in the future, but essentially this guy is a lonely character. He installs a new operating system. And again, this is set in the future, unspecified future. But this character is, you know, very advanced kind of artificial intelligence, and a relationship develops. He falls in love with it. That's, I think, all I need to say in terms of the plot here, in terms of intro. Movie's been very well received. I know the review and the blogosphere has reviewed it very well. I think it just picked up the top prize at the San Diego Film Critics. So,
yes, this morning.
Yes. So, Yazdi, you were there during the debate. Let's find out what you think and also what the film critics thought of it.
So the first thing I'll say is that this film is messy and it is absurd. But I also think it is wonderful and sometimes profound. And I mean, this is the sort of movie I think that cinema lovers will like to vigorously debate when they step out of the theater, either to completely eviscerate it and say it's a pile of crap, or to rapidly defend it. And I can see myself making a case in either camp. But for me, the one thing that always tips the scale for me with any movie is ambition. And oh, is this an ambitious movie? I mean, in its own way, it's, I think, almost startlingly original. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you have to count me as one of those rabid defenders of the movie. It doesn't get everything right, but what it does so differently.
Yeah, I would agree. What an interesting idea and concept, and yet another innovative and creative look at the future, rather like we said of Oblivion earlier this year. Not your average sci-fi movie, but one that I think that will stay with you for a long time, because it has elements of those existential questions that we all ask ourselves all the time. Just an incredibly smart movie about love and relationships on a whole different level. I really enjoyed this movie.
Joe, don't burst the bubble. Keep the balloon aloft. Don't bring it down.
Well, you see, I absolutely loved this movie. Oh. Like, this is possibly one of my favorite movies of the year. It was so, so, so touching, romantic, futuristic, sci-fi, well-performed, superbly written. I think there were so many, like you say, Rashmi, philosophical things that... I can't stop thinking about the movie. In fact, Rashmi, we watched this at home. It was one of the promotional award screeners that we got to watch here. And I think, yeah, you were about to give the DVD back to Yazdi, and I said to Rashmi, not so fast, simply because I have to see this a second time. I mean, as soon as I can, as soon as I have the opportunity. And now that we've done the review, I can actually tell Rashmi what I thought about the movie.
Yeah.
And make the time to watch it, because this was, it made me laugh. It made me cry. I just, wow. What a fabulous, fabulous film this was for me.
I mean, we can talk about this for hours. I mean, I think the movie's, you know, there are many people who are naysayers, you know, who don't like this movie. And their point is that there's nothing original about this movie, that, you know, it's the same story of, you know, man, you know, we're getting, you know, how we are so connected with the machine that we've lost our humanity and so forth. But my point is, how else are you going to tell the story? I mean, there is no other way to tell the story about man and his connectedness. And I think this is about as beautifully and as poetically and as wistfully. There's an achingness about the movie that this can be done, and without it seeming contrived or without it seeming like it's obviously manipulating you. It has so much to say about how we live today. It has so much to say about our connectedness, so much to say about how we are evolving, and the person we are trying to evolve with is evolving at a different speed, and how there's a difficulty, you know, when you're at a certain point in time when different people have evolved at different paces. I mean, it has a lot to say.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I love the fact that it is almost taking a stance on who are we when we look in the mirror, and who are we when we're looking outside and being in the outside world. So in addition to all of the things you said, Yazdi, I mean, you know, what is love? Do you need someone physical to love, or can you love anything or anyone or an animal or, you know, a song? What evokes passion? Just amazing. And I have to say, Scarlett Johansson blew me away in this movie, because we never see her. And she hasn't got the luxury of even being an animated character. All we hear is a voice. And I think she absolutely, again, I wish she would get an Oscar nod for this.
She might.
I mean, it's difficult for me to support an Oscar nomination, simply because it is all with the voice, right? She doesn't have a lot of the challenges of the physicality, that emotional, and that other actors had to kind of deal with. But I agree with what you're saying, Rashmi. I mean, you know, she nails every line. Like,
I felt like I knew that character. It was an operating system, yeah.
That's a hard role.
It is a very hard role, and you know, it's part of what made me, you know, really relate to this movie in so many ways, because, you know, techwala, nerd, geek, whatever. But, you know, our relationship with these devices that we have in our lives today, I think, is why I found this movie so fascinating to watch. It's like, well, what happens in 10 years time when I can actually have a conversation with Siri? Lena, right now Siri is this frustrating thing that understands you half the time, and half the time
she doesn't like me.
She can't stand Rashmi, which is a hilarious thing, but yeah, maybe there's something going on there. Maybe she's a little envious there. Watch out for 10 years time with Siri version 5. But it, for me, I think, you know, it makes me evaluate the it wasn't necessarily the relationship that they had, but it's the connection that he had with something that didn't exist, you know, that was code. You know, as a self-professed geek, I will say that I do have a relationship with my iPhone, right? I carry this thing everywhere, and I'm lost without it. And so this was just like a natural extension of that. And it made me think about what life might be like in 50 years time. You know, who will our friends be? You know, when we have AI that we can relate to, that we can connect to, that know us better than anyone else in the world, what will that mean for friendship? I mean, so many people interact via like Facebook these days. Well, what if Facebook replying to you was an algorithm? I mean, all these things just flooded my mind, and I wanted to see more and more and more.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the obvious character arc is that of the lead character played, you know, I've never been a Joaquin Phoenix fan, but God, he's good here.
He's really good.
And, you know, the obvious is his, you know, he's this very closed off kind of, you know, sad person, you know, who is unable to accept an impending divorce. And, you know, he's very emotionally closed off. And, you know, his character goes through an arc, and he almost needs to go through what he does in order to open himself up to the world again. But far more fascinating is the evolution of the Samantha character, the operating system character.
Yeah.
I mean, it's code which undergoes an evolution as the movie progresses. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the genius of the movie. That's the futuristic part of the movie, where, you know, it opens up the possibilities in terms of, you know, that thing is sentient. It's alive in its own way, with its code and with zeros and ones. It's alive. It's evolving. And it's, you know...
And it goes from being programmed to being its own entity and being able to code itself.
We've seen that kind of thing before. You know, there's a lovely little movie, you know, Short Circuit. Well, wasn't even a little movie, it was a blockbuster. Yeah. But, you know, the Johnny Five, I'm Alive, you know, the Wall-E, we've seen this kind of self-aware computer kind of thing before. I think more than anything was the relationship that the Joaquin Phoenix character forms with that. It's fascinating.
And where he is in his life, is so perfectly the right thing that he needs at that point in his life.
But then the realization of everyone around him also has one.
Yeah. And, you know, last evening I was writing up for our website. I was writing up, you know, the nominations, you know, for the San Diego Film Critics Society. And I wrote a one-line summary of the movie, and I said it's about a man in a not-so-distant future who falls in love with his computer operating system. And even after I wrote that, that's factually correct, but it seemed like a joke. It seemed like...
Yeah, it seems gimmicky.
It seems, if somebody heard about it, like a bad episode of, you know, SNL on TV, but this movie's completely the opposite of that. It's so much more thoughtful.
But therein lies the beauty of the movie, because I think in lesser capable hands, you know, if it wasn't anything other than exquisitely written and really directed with a real sense for what the movie was trying to be, if it could have been ruined in so many ways, right? You know, the wrong actors, the wrong director, you know, some clumsy writing, but everything was handled so perfectly that stuff that ordinarily would have been cheesy and almost laugh out loud silly was very, very believable and thought-provoking, right? I mean, everything just kind of clicked. How does that happen? It happens when you have people who really understand the craft of movie making come together and deliver something like this. And that, to me, is... I'm just full of admiration for how the movie played out.
I mean, this movie won the top prize with the New York Film Critics, right? Yeah, it did. And then, you know, today the San Diego Film Critics gave it the top prize. And I think, you know, in a year which is almost, you know, filled with an embarrassment of riches, if you ask me, but there's amazing movies which came out this year. Why did this rise to the very top? I mean, we picked it as the best movie of the year as well. And I think because of there are two levels where it does an amazing job. One is everything we talked about right now about, you know, what it has to say about the world and where we are going and our connectedness and so forth. But then there is this completely other level, which is the visual world of this movie.
Hmm.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. I mean, and I'm not just talking about...
An inventive.
Yes. I'm talking about right down to the costume design, right down to the archaeology, right down to a Los Angeles that probably will never exist, but that I want to live and see, you know, beautiful, pulsating, you know, future that I really... Not a scary future, a future I want to be part of.
Yeah.
You know, these elevators with, you know, tree silhouettes in the background and, you know, people wearing all these, you know, he's wearing all these orange hues. And, you know, somebody mentioned this today. I didn't even realize it when I was watching the movie. But initially, when you see the character, it's framed with a lot of headspace. All the early shots in the movie has him at the bottom and a lot of headspace at the top. And as the movie kind of progresses, that headspace becomes smaller and smaller. And there's a commentary there in terms of where he's at emotionally and where he's getting at emotionally. I mean,
that's fascinating. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and this is somebody who's put a lot of thought and who's saying a lot of things visually as much as through the dialogue.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, the production design is
Yeah.
And I love the job. I mean, the job that this guy does, which is he writes letters on other people's behalf. And it's amazing to me then, you know, as you talk about that emotionality of the character, how disconnected he is in his personal life, yet for other people, he's able to be so connected, right?
That's
so then
the
there's
irony.
This kind of other part of the movie as well. Yeah, great movie.
I mean, okay. I have to confess, you know, when I was watching the movie, I was not that emotionally devastated by it or emotionally invested, but it's just stuck with me more than any other movie I've seen in the last, you know, during these awards season. And I can't wait to see it again.
Well, you're not going to get that screener back anytime soon.
That's fine. In fact, I want some distance so I can, you know, I can appreciate it more.
Yeah. Okay. I think I feel a summing up. I'm actually shocked that you loved it. I actually wrote in my notes, I don't think Joe will like this very much, and I think Yazdi will love it. I thought might think it's too subliminal, but I forgot that there's a geekness in it that probably connected
you. And you did not like Holy Motors.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
Because that was just random crap. All right, let's start with a sum up.
Okay, Joe, you go.
I think I've said all I need to say. This was superb. This is easily one of my favorite movies. It's on my top 10 list. Not quite sure where in that list it will be, but I can't wait to see it again. a movie that I could wholeheartedly recommend to everyone as well. I mean, that's the other thing. I think this movie is very accessible. You don't have to be a geek. I don't think you have to be hopelessly romantic to enjoy it either. 9 out of 10. Easily.
Yes, see.
I mean, we haven't even talked about the casting. I mean,
oh, yeah,
you know,
gosh.
Amy Adams and Olivia Wilde and
Rooney Mara.
I mean, there are four great actors. And interestingly, before I get to the score, Samantha Morton, the British actor, she was the one she's a tremendous actor. She was the original one who was picked to play the Samantha role in the movie. And he recorded the whole movie and he did it, you know, with her. And then while he was processing the movie, he realized that was just not working. So at the back end, they brought in Scarlett Johansson, you know. So she came in after the movie had been shot and completed and, you know, she kind of filled in and he wanted a different take on it. So it's fascinating how, you know, not to take away from Scarlett Johansson's contribution to the movie. You know, there are many people for whom this movie will not work. I'm not one of those. I would take this any day of the week than the sort of polished, you know, safe movies that everybody seems to be churning out. I mean, this movie has ambition to spare, and ambition is the highest.
I disagree with you. I don't think anyone that won't enjoy this.
Really? Yeah, I mean, I
don't know. I don't think everyone will.
I think this movie
might irritate some people.
Irritate some people. But for me, you know, there is no higher ideal for movies than that of ambition. So I'm stuck between 8 and 9. I mean,
it's the end of the year now,
Yasti. 9 out of 10.
Yes.
9 out of 10. The evasive 9 out of 10.
There's not been many of those from you this year.
No.
Yeah, nothing more to add. I think for me, it's more of an 8 than a 9.
So 9, 9, and 8.
Terrific, terrific stuff. And completely out of nowhere for me.
Super imaginative. I just love how super imaginative this is.
This world
the production
rich.
Is amazing in this one. But I mean, you are right, Yasti. This is one to be seen on the big screen if you can see it. I think Joey should go and see it on the big screen.
Oh, no arguments from me there at all. I mean, it was so inventive and full of tiny little details and just so well realized. I mean, this was a vision of a future it's believable, you know. It's the Chris Nolan verisimilitude kind of thing that he always talks about, where it might be fantasy, it might be fake, but it has to be believable, you know. And that really struck a chord with me. That, you know, I want this stuff. I want these gadgets. I want that video game that he played. You know, I want these things in my world. I want to be able to use my computer.
Oh gosh, I forgot about the video game.
It's
so cute.
I want to be there, right?
Yeah,
there,
you know, but in his apartment.
I just want to be in that Los Angeles. You know, there is a great scene where there's this fish. There's a giant architecture of a fish which is turned over backwards, and he's walking around LA. It's a big white fish. And I don't think that exists in LA. That has to be CGI. But it's been so beautifully thought up by someone that in a future LA. I mean, parts of that LA look like the High Line, where people are walking, you know, across between buildings.
And parts of it look like Tokyo.
Yeah.
Or South
Asia,
Korea.
Or Shanghai, I think, kept coming to mind. I always think it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, a lot of the movie is absurd because it asks you to believe things which, within the confines of what we know as reality right now, seems absurd. But, you know, these actors, you know, play it so beautifully that they kind of transcend that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I also like that the movie it's not a happy movie at any point. You know, there's a sadness through it from the start, and it's sustained, and a sweetness even. You know, the Joaquin Phoenix character he's sweet. You know, there's something sweet about him, and we've never seen him do that before. He's always like mean and messed up and
thespian
psycho
and powerful,
yeah, and showing off, and you know.
And he's almost reflective. I like how reflective he is here.
And even though I was annoyed by the high pants and that mustache, and you know,
that was a bit odd.
But you know, it was all part of the whole vision. So.
Gosh. Really good stuff.
Two good movies.
All right. Yeah. Let us know what you think. Mail at moviewallahs.com, twitter.com/moviewallahs, and facebook.com/moviewallahs as well.
Time for bed.
It is time for bed. Yes. I think we've had three podcasts back to back to back, so we're all pooped. Sorry if the energy is a little low, but we'll bring it up back again next time. So until then, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.